The court will now hear oral argument in the case of United States v. Winkleman.
Good morning. May it please the court, Mary Hall and Captain Neff for the appellant, Lieutenant Colonel Douglas Winkleman. With the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. One short chat, no long-term grooming, no promises of gifts, no discussion of explicit sexual activity, no arrangements for a meeting, no travel, no actual meeting. What's left, then, to find that this dialogue in the chat room was a substantial step that showed an intent to engage in sexual activity with the other party to the chat? In looking at the facts of this case, it was clear that it was not the appellant, and for public sake, I will abbreviate the screen names of the cases in this case, as New York JoJo was not the one who brought up having sex with minors. New York JoJo was not the one who reinitiated the conversation after the 11-minute break. He was not the one who asked if they could talk soon. He was not the one who initiated the request for the phone number. And he didn't try and keep I Love online when I Love said he had to go. In other words, Your Honors, what's wholly missing from this case is any substantial step towards an intent to engage I Love in sexual activity.
Counsel, the offense we're talking about here is enticement. And the instruction was dealing with a substantial step toward having sex. The bulk of the case law on this says that the substantial step has to be toward enticement. What is the difference between those two standards, and is there any significance to that difference in this case?
Well, the lower court perceived the intent and substantial step to engage in sexual activity as a more defense-friendly instruction that had been given by the military judge that they regarded as the law of the case. But in looking at whether or not there was a substantial step for sexual activity, the sexual activity that was alleged in the specification was an indecent act or an indecent liberty, which requires the physical presence of the perceived minor. And you free tonight doesn't show that there was a substantial step to engage in indecent acts or indecent liberties with I Love, who was at the other end of that chat dialogue. So although the majority of the circuits have gone to a intent and substantial step to entice rather than to engage in the underlying sexual offense, the way it was instructed to the panel in this case and is the law of the case, is that there had to be a substantial step in the intent to engage in sexual activity, which again, this conversation, this dialogue is wholly lacking in any reference to activity specifically identified as an indecent act or an indecent liberty.
Would this be a different case if the military judge had instructed properly that it had to be a substantial step to entice?
No, Your Honor, I think the outcome is the same. I think under an either event, no rational juror, based on the facts of this case and the content of this dialogue, would find that there was anything beyond mere preparation at most for enticement or an intent or a substantial step to engage in actual activity.
Can you please define substantial step and mere preparation as you would hope we would define them?
Well, mere preparation are the preparatory steps that afford an individual the opportunity to do, based on the facts of what it is they intend to do. Let me back up, if I may, Your Honor. We would look at Article 80. Even though this wasn't charged as an attempt under Article 80, Article 80 is perceived to be the yardstick for all attempts in charged offenses. But it has to exceed mere preparation and go past or constitute a substantial step, which means that...
So far you've told me what I get, but now your job is to define what the difference is.
It has to unequivocally demonstrate that the crime will take place unless it's interrupted by independent circumstances, would be one definition of a substantial step.
And you're getting that from Gladish, the interrupted piece?
Actually, that's in several of the circuit cases, but it also has to be something that shows firm corroboration of intent, would be another definition that I've encountered in looking at these cases. So. If you are looking at wishy-washy language, which we submit you free tonight is, you simply aren't left with the firm conclusion that is an intent to engage in sexual activity, especially when you hold it up and compare it to Gladish, Getsky, and the host of other cases that are coming out of the circuit courts. Usually in those cases, Your Honors, there's a combination of factors, such as how long were these chats going on? Was there any explicit sexual activity, such as, hey, baby, here's what I want to do to you? That's all lacking in this case. Getsky, for example, is a marvelous data point because it's the case that many cite in terms of a case where there was no actual travel. But in Getsky, in comparing the facts of Getsky to this case, there was a developmentally disabled 10-year-old boy that the defendant in that case knew. He sent dozens, oh, maybe not dozens, let me retract that. He sent multiple letters to Louisiana to this boy's house. He called him on the phone. He promised him horseback riding lessons. He promised him a motorcycle if he'd come back to Montana. And he was very explicit about what features of the young man's body he found particularly attractive and what he wanted to do with the young boy. So when we look at a case like Getsky with all of those factors, we look and see, even though there was no actual travel, that had the young boy come back to Montana, only an independent circumstance would have kept Getsky from committing sodomy or some other type of sexual offense on that young 10-year-old boy. We just don't have that certainty in this case. Now, this court has not had the occasion to address 2422B in great detail, with the exception of the Garner case, which was a guilty plea, and in fact the court noted in Garner that it was sort of going to stay hands-off in addressing any more of the factual requirements, if you will, or the elements of 2422B because it was a guilty plea. But even if we look at Garner, we look at 17 hours of online communication spread out over a month, 11 different conversations, describing specific sex acts, expressing interest in particular sex acts, grooming through escalation of sexual comments, sending a webcam video, and then alluding to a future meeting, but without making any specific arrangements. And again, if we use Garner as data point, again, it was a guilty plea case, but simply looking at the facts, we see that if this was a continuum of where that substantial step and where the mere preparation stops, even Garner, had it been contested, would have had a plethora of facts that would have supported the finding of guilty if it had been a contested case. Of course, this court's ultimate ruling in Garner was based on the fact that he admitted that he had that intent, and we don't have that in appellant's case. As dissenting judge said below.
You have a question up here.
Yeah, Ms. Hall.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir.
What weight, if any, should it have on our thinking in this case that KM was really the promoter of this conversation?
Well, I think it shows, Your Honor, that KM was a bit more of the aggressor from the language, such as asking for the phone number. And
she was not an agent of the government at that time, was she?
She was not. She was the mother of a boy that appellant had befriended through a pen pal program. They had gotten on outs over some type of an issue over raising a disciplinary issue involving her teenage son. But she set up her teenage son to concoct screen names for her so that she could follow New York JoJo into whatever screen room he happened to be in. She did not remember, incidentally, for the July conversation, the name of the chat room that appellant was in, or New York JoJo was in, and she printed off only a portion of that chat. But in that chat, which she said she only printed about 1/40th of, according to her testimony, there was a lot of references to individuals wanting to trade pictures and talk on the phone and engage in IMs, and not unreasonable to assume that that was for purposes of rather instant sexual gratification. In fact, there's just multiple references to trade, chat, phone in the Prosecution Exhibit 1, which was the general chat room. We don't know exactly how I Love KM and appellant got into the chat room other than her testimony that, hey, he invited me in and I went in. But her son was not involved in this particular chat. It was only KM. If there are no further questions.
What's your response to the majority of the the lead opinion and the CCA's lead opinion, and the comment that each stroke of the key of the computer indicated intent. Do you remember that language?
I do. There is not a phrase, word, or even a single keystroke that could be remotely construed as a casual chat or anything other than a blunt exchange of meaning and engaging in sex. The appellant finds that an exaggeration in terms of the conclusion of the lower court. Again, was there an effort by New York JoJo to get to know I Love a little bit better? Sure, but for what purpose? Somewhere down the road, after many more steps, perhaps it could have been for an actual meeting. But one also can't rule out the possibility that in chat rooms, where even the detective testified that people falsified information with regularity, that there could have been a more immediate gratification purpose for getting party to engage in conversation about sex. I think it was the Tokarski case that said that not every communication with a minor about sex is a violation of 2422B. One has to look at the nature of the substantial step, and one can look at the intent accordingly.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Okay. Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Baker, judges of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Stephen Lucino, along with Major Ellen Jennings, represent the government. Appellant entered a sexually charged, minor-filled, bisexual, and gay male chat room, chose to chat with someone he thought who was a minor with a screen name I Love, who the appellant saw and verified lived close to him, and then asked Cam his sexual orientation, his sexual history, and what Cam was looking for in a sexual partner. Additionally, appellant told KM he would have sex with young boys, including the age of KM. It's at this point that the appellant asked, "You free tonight?" It is through the culmination and not the isolation of the words, "You free tonight," appellant took a substantial step in the attempted enticement of a minor.
Well, wait a minute. Are we talking about the substantial enticement, or are we talking about a substantial step toward having sex, as the CCA interpreted that instruction and found that it was the law of the case?
Your Honor, it is both in this case. And as...
Well, it seems to me you can have one or the other, but it's hard to have both.
Your Honor, in United States versus HOFUS, the Ninth Circuit Court stated it is rare for there to be a separation between the intent to persuade and the follow-up intent to perform the act after persuasion. So it's the government's position that what the appellant was doing was both toward the enticement and toward bringing about the sexual activity. So if you look at the instruction by the military judge, he said that the individual knowingly and willingly took some action that was a substantial step toward bringing about or engaging in that sexual activity.
You talk about going into this sexually charged room and asking this and asking that. Doesn't the government concede in its brief that there's nothing here without that last statement?
Without the "you free tonight"?
Yes.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
That is the...
Right. All this other stuff is ornament.
Yes, Your Honor. It would form the entire Christmas tree, if it were, to know all the information that's at hand, at least that culmination of "you free tonight."
Okay, "you free tonight" is the star on top of the tree.
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Could you please define substantial step in mere preparation and help us understand what the difference is in the context of this case?
Yes, Your Honor. In this case, a substantial step would be an appreciable fragment of the crime. It would unequivocally demonstrate that the crime will take place unless interrupted by independent circumstances.
So how would this crime have taken place at the time they signed off?
Oh, Your Honor, the independent circumstances was that the victim didn't have buy-in for the sexual act. After "you free tonight"?
The victim didn't have buy-in. Where'd the victim say that in the exchange?
Your Honor, any rational tier of fact could have found looking at the when KM asked for a phone number, that she was not at that point willing to set up any meeting. Now, that would be the independent cause which caused a stop to the enticement of a minor. There is no requirement that the victim of an enticement has to buy in or go along with the enticement itself.
Who asked whom for the phone number?
KM asked for a phone number, to which the appellant stated that he'd rather just email me when you want to get together.
So he put it back in the court of KM, correct? Is that how you read that?
And additionally, the government would like to point out that...
Why is that not mere preparation versus a substantial step?
Because at this point, Your Honor, we have the enticement at this point is complete. They've talked about sex. They want to... He wants to get together with KM, and the only thing stopping it is KM saying, okay, let's meet.
And in light of the military judge's instruction that the underlying attempt has to go towards the sexual activity and not the enticement, that doesn't affect your analysis there?
It does not. When the military judge says it's a substantial step for bringing about that sexual activity, it can be fairly read that's the enticement itself. The enticement is what the appellant is doing to bring about that sexual activity. So although the burden for the government is higher, as the Army Court has stated, it's not that much higher than what was already had to be proven.
Counsel, I want to follow up on our earlier discussion in the Goski case and talking about the difference between the instruction that was given and the language of the statute, a substantial step to entice and a substantial step to have sex. In Goski, they said that attempting to engage in sexual activity is an attempt to achieve the physical act of sex for which physical proximity is integral. That's what was instructed on. Attempting to persuade, induce, entice, or coerce a person to engage in sexual activity is an attempt to achieve a mental act of assent for which physical proximity can be probative, but is not required. So it seems to me that there is a distinction there. And if we're going to follow what the CCA did, we're dealing with the instruction that they gave rather than what the majority of cases have said is the substantial step. And here, there was no travel, so there was no proximity. Doesn't that enter into our consideration?
No, Your Honor. In this case, there actually is proximity just because they're both located in the same city. The proximity is a lot closer in this case as opposed to the appellate cases where travel you would need to make hotel reservations or you would need to get in your car and start driving or do something along those lines. In this case, they're in the same city. Appellant was looking for sex in the city. He looked and found somebody who was in his city. And by the chat room, all KM said was his age, sex, and location. At that point, appellant went and verified where he was. Appellant was, the proximity in this case is actually informative just because he chose somebody that lived close to him. And attempted enticement itself is a speech crime. So in this case, the typing of words and sending them across the internet can be that substantial step. Every time the appellant sends something over the internet in the chat room dialogue, he is gathering information about KM and seeing if KM meets his needs. And
what's the point in the discussion where he crosses the line from mere preparation to a substantial step?
Your Honor, in this case, it's the government's position that it's when he typed, you free tonight. Preparation in this case would be, for instance, entering the chat room. Just being in a sexually charged chat room with minors can be a preparation toward an enticement, but it is not of itself an attempted enticement at that point. And once he chose the KM to have the discussion with, he is starting to roll that ball further that away from preparation and toward substantial step.
Somewhere on the continuum, but you're arguing he's already at the substantial step mode.
Your Honor, it's the government's position once the appellant typed you free tonight, that was the culmination of the enticement.
So none of the chatter before that statement constituted a substantial step?
It could, Your Honor. I think it could, but the government took the best argument, which would be that once he stated you're free tonight.
So you're not arguing?
Hypothetically, a court in a rational tier of fact could find a substantial step when he's discussing the sexual orientation, what he's looking for in a partner, that could be a substantial step. However, we need not go that far in this case because we have the statement you're free tonight, which is the best argument for the government, that culmination of that is when the substantial step took place.
So you're not arguing, if I understand your argument correctly, you're not arguing that the preliminary discussions constituted a substantial step. It's when he makes that statement.
That is correct, Your Honor. The Appellant counsel stated that KM was promoter, or that KM was the promoter of the language. KM was not the promoter of the language. All KM did was dangle the worm out there, the 15 male New York. That's all the appellant needed to spring into action and start a chat with this individual. And additionally, there is no instant sexual gratification in this case because all the questions of the appellant were real world, let me know your sexual orientation, what you're looking for in a partner, where you are, because I'd like to set up a meeting. And that culminated with the You Free Tonight. Now, the get-to-know, there's several arguments that could be made that some rational tier of fact could find something different, but under the standard of review in this court, the court is bound to draw every reasonable inference from the evidence of the record in the light most favorable to the government, and that any rational tier of fact could have found the elements. And in this case, any rational tier of fact could have found the elements of attempted enticement of a minor.
Were the members instructed on what the definition of a substantial step is?
Your Honor, I do not believe they were.
Is that a term of art that your average member would understand in a case involving chatting on an internet?
The government believes that the rational pure fact would know what a substantial step is.
They'd get Gladish out and all the rest of the cases and sort it out? Are these clear terms of art, substantial step and mere preparation?
They're not clear terms of art, no, Your Honor. However, a rational tier of fact can take the evidence in and decide for themselves if they think that constitutes what is, in their mind, a substantial step.
But they weren't instructed on this?
No, Your Honor.
In the government's view, since the word attempt appears in the actual text, you can create a funny diagram that looks like an attempt to attempt. In your view, does that change anything? Or we write, the appellant said, go to Article 80. Are you in agreement that we should be informed by Article 80 as to what the terms mean in this context?
No, Your Honor, because as a speech crime, I think it's more informative to look at how other courts have looked at this issue. Because as something that's a speech crime, the generic Article 80 definition may not inform a panel in a case like this. So a more clear definition of a substantial step and what constitutes an attempt for enticement would be more important.
Counsel, what federal case would you rely on as closest to the facts in this case where they found that there was sufficient evidence to support a conviction? Name one case.
Your Honor, I believe Goski would probably be the closest. Gladish is very close, but it ended up on the opposite end of the spectrum. But there was evidence in Gladish that is not here. And basically, the appellate court in Gladish bought a hot air theory and also took into account a psychologist that wanted to testify concerning the appellant in that case being just happy and content with just having online conversations. And in this case, we don't have that. Because we have the appellant looking for that meeting itself through interpretations, that dialogue. He wasn't looking for gratification online. He wanted gratification in person. And a lot of the federal cases, because they're sting operations, you have buy-in from the victim saying, "Okay, let's meet. Let's set up a meeting. Come to my house. I'll skip school." Things along those lines. But we don't have that in this case because there's not buy-in from the victim. So a lot of the federal cases, the facts of the federal cases aren't going to be online with the facts of this case. So it's kind
of... So is your answer that there's no federal case that has as little going on as this case? Because there's no buy-in because it's not a sting operation by the police?
Correct, Your Honor. Most all the federal cases have that sting in police in the investigation itself. So they go in there when the appellant would say something like, "Are you free tonight?" in a sting operation, they would be, "Yes, I am free tonight," and allow the conversation to continue. So there's not that
continue ending. To make plans and talk about what they might do with each other, things of that nature?
Yes, Your Honor.
As opposed to leaving it with nothing, as happened here?
Your Honor, I wouldn't characterize it as nothing. There is an inquiry of the appellant into KM to find out what his sexual desires, what his orientation is, and then matching that with his own desires, and then wanting to meet the individual.
Does the government agree with the following paraphrase statement, that a substantial step in the context of this case is something that makes it reasonably clear that had you not been interrupted or made a mistake, you would have completed the crime?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you.
In closing, in this case, there is a substantial step toward the attempted enticement of the minor through this, the culmination of the words "you free tonight" when the appellant selected his victim in a chat room that was sexually charged, went through a dialogue to figure out if that victim met his needs, and then asked that victim if he was free tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Do you care to have rebuttal?
This time it will be quite short, Your Honor. The distinction between preparation and a substantial step is best, I think, illustrated by the discussion in the manual, which talks about an arson charge, where an individual goes and purchases a book of matches. And that would be regarded as the preparatory step, but actually putting the match to the haystack would be a substantial step towards the actual arson. In fact, the definition in the manual is preparation consists of devising or arranging the means or measures. And a "you free tonight" at best could be viewed as a preparatory step, but it was by no means setting the match to the haystack. If there are no further questions.
Thank you, counsel. The court thanks both counsels, and the case is now submitted. And the court will stand in recess until further order of the court.
Stands in recess until